with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, crmw.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy. Here we are, a minute past the hour on this Friday, the 7th day of April 2017. This is The Horn, headonradionetwork.com. It's where we live. And that, of course, is where you go if you would like to become part of the madcap multimedia real-time merry, zany, wacky extravaganza that is The Horn chat room. Pick yourself out a screen name and a password at headonradionetwork.com/chatroom. And jump right in where you will be immediately met by Barkway and Hoghead. I'm reading ahead of myself. Barkway and Hoghead and Jug of Punch and Squeaky and Steve from Georgia Stan and BT Blom. All capably moderated by longtime inveterate, indefatigable veteran chat room moderator Sparky, who being a third stage guild navigator on what must apparently be at least a tolerable day in Northern California, has folded space to become Man Cave.
Hi,
I'm Bob Kincaid, and I'm a little tired. This is not me crawling up on the cross, because, yeah, I know, we all need the wood. But 4 days of doing two different shows an hour apart is a little exhausting. And especially, you know, when you kind of don't feel, you know, completely up to your normal chipper self. But I sure did have fun over the last four nights filling in for Mike Malloy. Look forward to the next opportunity. And I hope those of you who followed on over enjoyed it as well. And if we have new friends who popped over from Malloy land to participate in the long-form conversation that we've had here for yay, low, these many years now. Welcome. Welcome. Hope you'll find yourself right, make yourself right at home, and be part of the discussion, part of the dialogue. Yeah, it is Friday, as I mentioned. That means it's Friday on the front porch time, one of my favorite days of the week. Here in about, 56 minutes or so, we will fire up the Extraordinary Ordinary Roundtable and gather in those as want to participate over on the Horn Malloy Skype chat group and see what's grabbing people's attention this fine early spring Friday, to which I awoke cursing individual snowflakes as they fell from the sky. I'd say we had about maybe 2 inches of wet, sloppy, nasty stuff on the ground when I got up this morning to take Ferg to work. And it was cold. It was very cold. And I'm hoping this is the last snow of this spring. It's probably played hell with things that are blooming, things that are blossoming. Hope not too much, though. But I still, it's not Appalachia unless you've got an Easter snowstorm. It's pretty predictable, really. And as weird as this winter was, I'm still not entirely sold on the notion that we won't have a Mother's Day blizzard. Dadgummit, Marty, I threw the third switch. I'm sending. Everything's going. Ah, for pity's sakes, is this what's going to happen? Well, shoot. Must be more of that internet weather that Ben keeps telling me about. Ah, tune in is now working. Good. I don't know what. Well, go figure. Sparky tells me it's only working on TuneIn, which makes absolutely no sense whatsoever because TuneIn picks up the White Rose stream. There's no independent stream to TuneIn. I wish I understood the interweb tubes a little bit better. All I know is it's not a big truck. It's a series of tubes. Kind of wish I could, I wish I was more of in a traveling mood. This would be a lovely weekend to be down in the Shoals in northwest Alabama. Kent Duchesne, one of my favorite blues guitar players, playing at Blue Water tonight in Florence. 6:30 to 9 for all of $5 at the door. Mm-hmm. Tomorrow night, he'll be playing at the Flobama in Florence. And he'll be playing Sunday at the Rising Crust. If you're ever somewhere that you get a chance to see Kent Duchesne, don't pass up the opportunity. He is a fine solo performance artist with a national steel guitar named Lead Bessie, and he plays classic, Delta-style blues that will leave you anything but blue. Yeah, pick up a sack full of hot dogs at Dick Howell's and go and listen to some blues. Jack pointing out in Shreveport. Didn't you say last time this happened there might be a lag between TuneIn starting and White Rose getting through to the internet? I got nothing. I don't know. I don't know how. I'm kind of at a loss at this point. Hearing about 52 minutes or so, we'll fire up the Extraordinary Ordinary Roundtable. If you've never participated in that before, and you would like to be part of Friday on the Front Porch, you are more than welcome. All you need to do is send a contact request on Skype, to Sparky Dunk, SparkyDunc, one word, and Sparky will show you the breadcrumb trail, and he'll flash the bob signal up against the clouds for you. And you'll be part of the Extraordinary Ordinary Friday on the Front Porch Roundtable. So quick, your head will spin. Okay? Ooh, Ralphs is listening to the program and watching the Masters at the same time. Who's got the lead, Ralphs? Yesterday, I caught a little bit of it, and the wind was blowing so hard close to the ground, I swear I saw it blow putts away from holes. I know, golf, but still, it's a fun, if you can control your mind, you know, golf is played between the ears more than on the course, and it's probably the most zen of all sports, including archery, but enough of that. I suppose at some point in time we'll talk about on his big pants and deciding to shoot some extremely expensive fireworks. The problem is, it was probably illegal what he did, for everybody except those getting missiled. It's particularly hilarious how Republicans who stomped their feet and held their breath and threatened to hold it until they turned blue, if that one in the White House was to launch a strike back a few years ago, now all of a sudden they're all for it. It's just the neatest, grooviest, keenest thing that could possibly happen. Starting, of course, with Comrade Kumquat. When I'm saying you stay out of Syria, 3 September 2013. The president must get congressional approval before attacking Syria. Big mistake if he does not. 30 August 2013. Of course, Tovarich Tangerine didn't do that. Let's see. Back in 2013, Representative Paul Ryan, Eddie Munster, said that any military strike that one would launch cannot achieve its stated objectives. From out in Utah, behind the Zion Curtain, representing Jason Chaffetz, said he'd oppose use of force in Syria because there was no clear and present danger to the United States. This was, of course, after a chemical weapons attack that killed even more people than the most recent one did. Oh, by the way, last night, as the Clementine Caligula blathered on and on about the babies, the beautiful dead babies, the dead beautiful babies, the very beautiful dead, very beautiful babies. He may have been upset about it, but he wasn't upset to say, and so what we need to do is we need to make sure they have that the ones who didn't get gassed and the ones who didn't get killed have a nice place to live as refugees here in the new United States of America. Nope. Representing Marsha Gedneth Blackburn opposed the three-fifths of a president launching an airstrike in 2013. Last night, however, she tweeted, "No child of God should ever suffer such horror." She's going to be in trouble with her constituents as well because, of course, the people who were gassed in Syria are not children of God. They're Muslims. Marco Rubio, in 2013 said, "I've long argued forcefully for engagement in empowering the Syrian people. I've never supported the use of U.S. military force in the conflict, but now he can barely get his pants on for the stiffy that this one gives him." Orrin Hatch, Pete Olson, Robert Adelpate of Alabama, Larry Buckshon of Talibandiana, Senator Cory Gardner of Colorado. Yeah, they all were real concerned about the idea that one in our White House might launch some missiles at Syria. But now that an orange-colored serial sexual abuser is doing it, well, it's really cool. You see how it works, of course. And over on the for-profit media, it was pretty disgusting. As Larry points out, Brian Williams shot his wad last night on the 22nd hour while asking Malcolm Nance to describe the attack in Syria. "Such beautiful weapons. Trump is apparently not concerned about non-white-skinned babies." What a setup, whereas Alex Jones and DisinfoWars on this one, yeah. And, of course, over on in certain neighborhoods that are allegedly left, the folks who think that Pooty Poot is just all cuddly and snugglesome, well, they're convinced, along with cranky old Uncle Ron Paul, that the gas attack itself was a false flag. It's a false flag. Absolutely. And meanwhile, nothing much is going to change. Apparently, that very airstrip had been used last night to launch some raids on some civilians in and around Syria. They got home. They got missiled. You know. So, if you want to talk about that, we can talk about that. I don't much. You know. The problem is, as the noise continues to mount, that this was essentially a meaningless wag-the-dog attack, which it was. This is the kind of attack a president launches whose approval numbers are around 34%, you know, in the toilet. The scary part is that this is going to potentially force his hand so that he'll have to ramp it up and do something bigger for an encore. And there's been some talk about how there's, you know, there are layers of meaning that this wasn't just for the consumption of Syrians or Russians, or that there were other people out there that needed to be reminded that things could go sideways. I'm sorry, Billable Rick telling me that I'm echoing on TuneIn. I wish I had any control over that at all. I do not. Yeah, and by the way, speaking of Brian Williams blowing his load, Fareed Zakaria, with whom I desperately want to play high-stakes three-card Monty. You know, maybe for 1 week of his salary. Yeah, he lost it. Donald Trump became the president last night. Jesus, he made it sound like somebody lost their virginity. Okay, so Bill, just my prior email, I had a second TuneIn browser open. Don't do that to me, Rick. These things that are beyond my control make me a little less than sane. Some would say I stay that way. But no, the idea that other people were supposed to get a message from what happened last night, you know, everything's a movie reference to me. And I immediately thought of one of my favorite films, quite probably my favorite baseball film, Bull Durham. And the scene, well, I'll play it in a second here. Where maybe you just want to, you know, keep Kim Jong Lulu from digging in, kind of wondering what's going on. This is the scene.
Here. I'm cruising, man.
I want you to throw the next one at the mascot.
Why? I'm finally throwing it where I want to throw it.
Just throw it at the bull, huh? Trust me.
It's the boss.
A staggering start by LaLouche. He's thrown 5 outs on 9 pitches. All of them strikes. He's got pinpoint control here tonight, bull fan. Here's the pitch.
And he drills the mascot in the head.
This guy's crazy.
I don't know where it's going to go. I swear to God.
One of the reasons I love the movie, but when I heard some pundit saying that this was supposed to be this was sort of sausage to actor in the world, Comrade Kumquat was a bad man, a dangerous man. That's the first place my mind went. And seeing how I'm going to be, I'm already kind of worn out and tired. I'm thinking I might actually watch Bull Durham this evening, even though it involves watching the odious Susan Sarandon, who's still out there. Well, you know, it may be good that we got Trump. Mm-hmm. Because even the lotus has to rise from the mud. Fucking idiot. But still, she did a brilliant job. And I mean, that whole cast did a brilliant job. It's a wonderful movie. Yeah, Marty agrees it's his favorite baseball movie, too. Although there's a great one that nobody ever talks about. And this is would be a good time to go and find it and watch it. It's an old one. It's black and white. Stars Ray Milland. And it's called It Happens Every Spring. And it's a great little baseball flick. Lighthearted, you know. Meanwhile, Arnold points out what these politicians are exemplifying is the name they often get. Hypocrites. And, you know, that word comes to us from the Greek. You know what it means? It kind of translates as bad two-bit B-movie actor. Of course, they didn't have movies in ancient Greece, but, yeah. C-list actor. And now it means somebody who says one thing and does another, oblivious to what they've done. So, you know, it, in other words, it applies to the entirety of the Republican caucus in the United States Senate, for instance, because, well, Neil Gorsuch done got himself confirmed today. Look out, women. Look out, truck drivers. Look out, working people. Look out, people who want a political process not polluted with dirty, dark money. Look out. Oh, and a couple of things. This is just an advisory. You remember the other night? Remember the other night when Sean wrote in about how, you know, he started off with an F-bomb in the subject line and it only got worse? And he swore that I'm never going to listen to the horn again. I think actually the line was, I'm done listening to the horn. I'm sick of you attacking Jill Stein voters. Remember that? I'm not attacking Jill Stein voters. I'm just pointing out, you know, stupid. Which has kind of been the operative principle behind this program for more than 12 years now. Well, Sean promised he was going to stop listening to the horn, and then he didn't. And so I got an email yesterday evening. Bob, I'm about to drive to West Virginia and see if you say any of what you said the other night to my face. Save the gas. Just play the replay the podcast. It's not my fault Hillary was the worst nominee in Democratic Party history. See, this is what I mean when I say that we're dealing with political infants. The question wasn't, is she the worst nominee in Democratic Party history? The question was, is she worse than Donald Trump? And the obvious answer was no for everybody except people who live under bell jars in Ripley's Believe It or Not Auditorium. That's spelled O-D-D-I-T-O-R-U-I-U-M. But making predictions without the benefit of an old magic eight ball with a cracked screen that says answer hazy, ask again later, goes on to do some predicting. Trump won't last the rest of the year. Trump isn't the problem. Okay. That's not Trump's budget that zeroed out Meals on Wheels and wiped out after-school meal programs for hungry children. No, Trump's not the problem.
He's bad, but he's bad for the short term. I just put Neil Gorsuch on the court, and that little motherfucker is going to be there for 40 years. That's some long short term.
Hillary would have us in World War III by now.
This came in, by the way, a matter of minutes before the news broke that Donald Trump had fired off 59 Tomahawk cruise missiles in a half-hearted attempt to, you know, start World War III.
You're giving in to the propaganda pushed by the Dems.
Actually, Sean, you're giving in to the propaganda pushed by the Russians, but never mind that. Let's just make something clear. And maybe this can finally be the end of it. There were only three reasons. And granted, Jill Stein is irrelevant. She's a cipher. She's a whack-a-mole that only pops up every 4 years to hustle the credulous out of their money. But there were only three reasons for voting for Jill Stein. Let's be clear about this. One was that you actually thought there was a secret groundswell of support out there that was going to make Jill Stein president of the United States because she would win. See my CF, compare favorably, my above comment about people who live under bell jars in Ripley's Believe It or Not auditorium. That number has got to be ridiculously small if it even exists. I mean, the people who believe that had to be voting in their first election and doing so with absolutely industrial levels of LSD coursing through their neurons. And then there's the second one, the Jill Stein voter who actually hopes Donald Trump wins. These people exist too. I can't fathom them. I can't begin to try to analyze them. But they exist because, you know, Jill Stein herself, in response to one of her campaign people, said, "I wholeheartedly agree that that Hillary Clinton would be a worse president for America than Donald Trump." And let's see, quick ciphering, that's 11, 28, 29, 59. 60, 90. Did I do that right? 11, 20, 29, 39, 79, 80, 87. I think, yeah, the last 80 or so days sort of put the lie to that madness. And then we come to the third category. The Jill Stein voter who was so self-absorbed and so self-involved with their precious tender fifis and felt the need to remain somehow morally and ethically pure while participating in an incredibly tawdry electoral process in the first place where it is impossible to remain pure, but voted for Jill Stein thinking, well, there'll be enough people out there doing it, getting the answer right so that I can wallow in my own self-indulgence. That's it. Those are the only three ways that existed to vote for Jill Stein. Dogman in the chat room. Tell Jill Stein how to vote next time. Nah, I'd rather tell her to go jump in a lake, but, you know, never mind. That's just me. I'm mean. Maybe she could go and jump in Lake Baikal. that's obscure. So, just, you're giving in to the propaganda pushed by the Dems. See, I love how it's propaganda, when in point of fact, it's actually facts. Facts. Because if you say, Hillary would have us in World War III by now, 30 minutes before the Tomahawk cruise missiles fly on the command of Donald Trump, well, you're giving in to somebody else's propaganda now, aren't you? Because that's just speculation. Rank speculation. But I want to revisit something from the other night. Where'd it go? Let me check email. I may have infuriated someone. Happens. Randy says, will you please stop acting like the Horn community had definitive control of the last election? I'm not acting like that. I'm not acting like that at all. I'm not even talking about members of the Horn community, Randy. I'm talking about the people who, for one of only three possible reasons, voted for Jill Stein. But I'm talking about it on the Horn inside our community. Now, like I said, I want to revisit, maybe Tuesday night. Tuesday night on the Malloy program. I engaged in a rather lengthy examination of Bernie Sanders' explanation that Trump voters are absolutely, positively, 100% not racists, bigots, xenophobes, homophobes, neo-Nazis, Klansmen, and various supporters thereof. And I made what I thought was a pretty good case. So then I got a note from Jason, who sent me this long, I'm going to share it with you, long thing that has absolutely no paragraph breaks in it whatsoever and is a real bitch to get through. See, Jason's convinced that I don't understand politics at all. And I sure don't understand Bernie, and I don't understand the American people. Well, listen, I listened to you on Malloy Tuesday night, and I don't think you are understanding Bernie. You are generalizing all Trump voters, and I think that's the absolute wrong strategy if we want progressive Democrats to win elections. When in point of fact, what I said the other night was that I suppose it is possible there are some Trump voters who weren't racist, xenophobes, etc., but that a significant plurality of them are. And when you pretend that none of them are, you enable the ones who are. We should not be alienating rural working people by saying that all of them are racist. This is what you are not understanding about what Bernie is saying. You can say these people are gullible, ill-informed, and easily taken by hustlers, yeah, because that's not going to piss them off. It's only if you call them fucking racists that they're going to get mad. Because they'll get mad because they actually are. But if you tell them that they're a bunch of goddamn simpletons who fell for a line of pure 200-proof horse shit and that they probably don't have any business voting because they're too goddamn stupid and walk on their knuckles and mouth breathe. Now they'll go, oh, okay, you know, because I'm economically anxious. That's true. That's why they voted for Trump. Another reason why I know that all of them are not racist is because many of these folk voted for a black man named Barack Hussein Obama. Now, remember that statement. A lot of them who voted for Trump voted for Obama. That has been one of the favored tropes among people who want to deal with anything except the racist reality, the bigoted realities of this country. However, because they were duped by Trump's economic rhetoric, they switched and voted for Trump. This assertion, of course, requires one to be inside people's heads and know exactly what motivated them to do what they did. They thought he was an anti-establishment populist who would stop the bad trade deals and bring back their jobs. This, of course, is assuming that they can even pronounce, let alone spell, anti-establishment populist. What's that really, really long word? Anti-disestablishmentarianism? They were duped, just like those Reagan Democrats. And just like we progressives who voted for Obama thinking he was a progressive. I voted for Obama. I didn't think he was a progressive. I don't know who did vote for him thinking he was a progressive. If that's the case, that's a matter of transference. That's a matter of people pulling the St. Paul on him and making him all things to all people. He is saying that we have to stop with the red-blue state dichotomy. We must stop separating ourselves from others. Bob, I have seen two town halls filled with Trump voters that probably call themselves conservative Republican, and just about all of them cheered Bernie's progressive policy proposals and said that had he been the Dem nominee, they would have voted for him instead of Trump. I don't know where these town halls were. I was at Bernie's town hall down in McDowell County, West Virginia, and you may rest assured that that group was not a whole bunch of conservative Republicans. Bernie is saying that we need to stop with the name-calling of our neighbors or family members who voted for Trump and come together on those progressive policy proposals that we do all agree on. This is the only way that Democrats are going to get these people on board, Bob. Calling all Trump voters racist is not a productive way of winning these folks over. All said, significant portion of big reality. He understands that they were duped because they were desperate for improvements in their own lives. I wonder if that's why these self-same, like here in West Virginia, these self-same Trump voters also ran to the polls to elect good, God-fearing, upstanding, Bible-believing, Christ-centered, evangelical, Christian, fundamentalist, homosexuals, because they promised that they wasn't going to let that one in our White House take away their guns and their Bibles and their co. Also consider the role of media, Bob. Bernie has called out the corporate media for not talking about the real issues, being an infotainment circus. Recall that Trump got close to $3 billion in free publicity. Yeah? Easy to see how gullible working folks who aren't informed are so easily duped. I love it. I can't call them racist, but Jason can call them gullible. That's why the Democratic Party need to clean up their act and listen to Bernie if they want to actually win in red states and rural areas. Remember that, and this is the part where I get told about how people are here in my own state. Remember that Bernie and his progressive policies are loved in deep red West Virginia. Oh, that's a real Lulu. Bernie's votes from the primary would not have even approached Trump's votes in the general. And no, West Virginians do not love Bernie's policies. Bernie, among other things, believes in climate change. The people of this state, Well, no, Bernie doesn't believe in climate change. Climate change isn't a fucking religion. Bernie acknowledges climate change, you know, as a reality, as an existential threat to every human being on the planet. The vast majority of people in my state, however, think that it's something that that one in their White House ginned up to support his war on coal so that he could put all the good, God-fearing, Bible-believing, Christ-centered, evangelical, fundamentalist, homosexual minors out of work because he just enjoyed doing that to white people. It was payback time. That's where I live. Corporate Dems like Clinton and Manchin with their neoliberal policies. Neoliberals! Coffee's cold! Not so much. Again, not so right. Joe Manchin skates in every time he runs for office, and Hillary Clinton stomped the living guts right out of Barack Obama back in 2008. And by the way, Shelley Moore Capito beat the living piss out of a candidate for Senate, a Democrat, who had not only Hillary Clinton's endorsement, but Elizabeth Warren's too. Uh-huh. And she got, I mean, curb stomped by the daughter of the most corrupt man ever to occupy the governor's mansion in the state of West Virginia. But do please continue telling me about my state. Bernie is correct concerning many Trump voters. We can't demonize all of them, and I haven't. We have to win back the ones who actually voted for Obama 4 years ago. You know, both of them. Bernie has the right strategy that is a proven winner. We must communicate with these people. These people. These poor people. And we will win them over with progressive policy. $15 an hour minimum wage, single-payer health care, free college tuition, expanded Social Security. This is the way, Bob. I don't understand why he's lecturing me when I've been supportive of all of these policies probably since before he was born. Consider all those Eisenhower Republicans in Vermont, close to 30%, who always voted for Bernie. It's because he is genuine and they agree with his policies, not because his hair is sometimes messed up. When did I argue that Republicans in Vermont support Bernie because of his hair? Or his suit is wrinkled? I don't think I have. Or that he is a Jew that doesn't really practice. Get it, Bob? Yeah, because, you know, I'm so clueless. So that's Jason's note. And it is a real Lulu. Now let's check out some quotes. How about the Washington Post? I know. Goddamn neoliberal newspaper, son of a bitch. Now, this isn't the editorial page. This is actual reporters reporting things. Mm-hmm. Betty Harris, a widow from Oklahoma, voted for Barack Obama when he first ran for president in 2008 because she liked his promise of change. But he disappointed her in a number of ways, including, in her eyes, being too sympathetic to Muslims. She voted for Republican Mitt Romney in 2012 and Trump last year. She likes the president's promises to crack down on illegal immigration, which she thinks has hurt the job market, and to bully manufacturers into staying in the country. Okay, that's a good, succinct analysis, Dogman. Trump was different things to different people. The election was about emotion. That's why Bernie and Trump were the leaders. But people were too stupid, too desperate, or too ill-informed, or, hey, how about too racist, to see that. overlooking for white supremacy is a far reach. Well, here's the part where all of Jason's arguments crumble into a million teeny tiny pieces. And it comes from one of Jason's very favorite news outlets. It comes from The Intercept. Now, I read some stuff from The Intercept. And whether it pisses people off or not, I'm going to say this. I said the same thing to Jason in a Twitter exchange. Do not send me links to articles by Glenn Greenwald. I won't read them at all. All I have to do is see his name and it's over. Because he's incapable of writing an article that isn't at least two-thirds about Glenn Greenwald and some grievance of Glenn Greenwald and ending in a seventh-grade slap fight and an attempt to get a Twitter flame war going. It's kind of like something that happened, what, yesterday or so? A writer for that website that rhymes with light and fart was tickled pink because the U.S. government, the Pentagon, I think, actually tweeted a link to her story, which was largely a transcription of a government press release that she published over at Light, at the website that rhymes with Light and Fart. Then she hung around in the Twitter in the comments to fight with people, saying, "What's wrong with my article?" This is the Glenn Greenwald style of interaction. But even though I will not read Glenn Greenwald, that does not mean everybody at The Intercept is as bad as Glenn Greenwald. For instance, this particular article by Mehdi Hassan. Headline, "Top Democrats Are Wrong. Trump supporters were more motivated by racism than economic issues." No, Bob, we've just got to reach out to them because they only voted for Trump because they're gullible. They're going to love you for saying that to them. But Mehdi Hassan writes, "It isn't only Republicans, it seems, who traffic in alternative facts. Since Donald Trump's shock election victory, leading Democrats have worked hard to convince themselves and the rest of us that his triumph had less to do with racism and much more to do with economic anxiety." Despite almost all of the available evidence suggesting otherwise. And Mehdi Hassan went to the same place I did a couple of nights ago, citing that quote from Bernie talking last weekend in Boston, in which he said, "Some people think that the people who voted for Trump are racists and sexists and homophobes and deplorable folks. I don't agree." And then The article also cites something Bernie had said in the New York Times, that these Trumpansies were, quote, "expressing their fierce opposition to an economic and political system that puts wealthy and corporate interests over their own." Well, there's no getting around the fact that it does, that the economic system as it is presently configured and will remain configured for the foreseeable future. Thanks, Judge Justice Neil. It's very real. But it really wasn't the motivator. The motivator was hate. Mehdi Hassan says, "Both Sanders and Warren seem much keener to lay the blame at the door of the dysfunctional Democratic Party and an ailing economy than at the feet of racist Republican voters. Their deflection isn't surprising, nor is their coddling of those who happily embraced an openly xenophobic candidate. Look, I get it. It's difficult to accept that millions of your fellow American citizens harbor what political scientists have identified as a racial resentment. The reluctance to acknowledge that bigotry and tolerance of bigotry is still so widespread in society is understandable from an electoral perspective, too. Why would senior members of the Democratic leadership want to alienate millions of voters by dismissing them as racist bigots? I think this is kind of a much more concisely expressed version of what Jason was trying to get at. Facts, however, as a rather more illustrious predecessor of President Trump once remarked, are stubborn things. Actually, what Reagan said was, facts are stupid things. Interestingly, on the very same day that Sanders offered his evidence-free defense of Trump voters in Boston, the latest data from the American National Election Studies was released. And that's the heart and soul of this article. The report is there. It's there for anybody who wants to go and read it. electionstudies.org/study pages, data center, and ta-da! You can go and read it for yourself. But here's the upshot. A man named Philip Klinkner, who is a political scientist and teaches at Hamilton College, who also has a significant level of expertise in race issues, race relations, went over the ANES data with a fine-toothed comb. And when Mehdi Hassan interviewed him, Professor Klinkner said, whether it's good politics to say so or not, the evidence from the 2016 election is very clear that attitudes about blacks, immigrants, and Muslims were a key component of Trump's appeal. Another quote. In 2016, Trump did worse than Mitt Romney among voters with low and moderate levels of racial resentment, but much better among those with high levels of resentment. In other words, Donald fucking Trump rode into the White House on a sea of white sheets. Among other things, Professor Klinkner noted last summer that the best way to identify a Trump supporter in the U.S. was to ask them one question. And one question only. Just one question. Not a battery. Not something where you tease out an answer from a whole bunch of disparate topics. Just one question. And the question you ask of the white person, and, you know, some others, is this. Is Barack Obama a Muslim? And what Professor Klinkner found out is that if the person you're asking is white, and if the white person you're asking answers yes, then 89% of the time, that person was going to have a higher opinion of Comrade Kumquat than of the devil! You know, Hillary Clinton. And there's no escaping it. I know we would like to hide our heads in the sand, But we have to acknowledge what kind of a nation we live in before we can ever even dream, let alone hope, of fixing it. The empirical evidence, Mehdi Hassan continues, just isn't there to support the people who think that it's all about the economy and class. Because, in fact, Trump won a majority of non-college-educated whites, but also a majority of college-educated whites as well. And he won more young white voters than Clinton did. And he also won a majority of white women. Citing analysts at The Nation, citing Sean McElwee and Jason McDaniel, racial identity and attitudes have further displaced class as the central battleground of American politics. According to Gallup, in this same article, after interviews with 125,000 Americans, Trump is likely to be unmission through trade or immigration. Jonathan Rothwell at Gallup said Trump's popularity cannot be neatly linked to economic hardship. So, in the exact obverse to what Jason argued, and what so many other people have argued, economic anxiety is a bullshit excuse. And the Trumpanzees were motivated by their racism, whether we like to admit it or not. Mehdi Hassan writes, look, if you still believe that Trump's appeal was rooted in economic and not racial anxiety, ask yourself the following questions. Why did a majority of Americans earning less than $50,000 a year vote for Clinton, not Trump? Why, in the key Rust Belt swing states of Michigan, Wisconsin, and Pennsylvania, did most voters who cited the economy as the most important issue facing the country opt for Hillary over Donald? And why didn't black or Latino working class voters flock to Trump with the same fervor as white working class voters? Or does their economic insecurity not count? Wow, 3/5. It's about race, because everything in this country is about race. Race touches everything. I'm sorry. I wish we had solved our problems sufficiently that one could realistically say that that is not true, but it is true. And finally this, because remember how Jason said, we've got to convince all those people who voted for Barack Obama and then voted for Trump to come back to the... Well, here we go. Defenders of the economy narrative have a gotcha question of their own. How can racial resentment have motivated Trump supporters when so many of them voted for Barack Obama across the Rust Belt in 2008 and 2012? Citing Michael Moore, Mehdi Hassan says, they're not racists, said Michael Moore. They twice voted for a man whose middle name is Hussein. Re-enter Professor Klinkner. One, most of them didn't vote for Obama. There weren't very many vote switchers between 2012 and 2016. Two, working class whites shifted to Trump less because they were working class than because they were white. Klinkner points out that in 2016, Clinton, unlike Obama, faced a Republican candidate who pushed the buttons of race and nativism in open and explicit ways that John McCain and Mitt Romney were unwilling or unable to do. You remember that moment when John McCain lost the election in a debate or in an appearance when the woman said, "I can't stand that Barack Obama because he's a Kenyan Muslim." And John McCain said, "Wait right there, ma'am. I know Barack Obama. He's a good American. He's a Christian. He's a good father and a good husband. And he is not a Muslim." And that was the moment that sunk John McCain. Finally, a quote from Michael Tesler at the University of California. Michael Tesler wrote "Post-Racial or Most Racial, Race and Politics in the Obama Era." He says, "The evidence suggests that racial resentment is driving economic anxiety, not the other way around." So I would say that the nails have been countersunk into the coffin of the economic anxiety bullshit excuse. It's done. We either deal with issues of race and get fully on board with that, or we get used to President Trump in 2020 again, followed by President Pence in 2024. Pretty simple, really. Michael in Madison with a note, subject line, imaginary racists. "The problem with all these Trumpsters ain't racist arguments, whether they come from Bernie or Biden or Warren or whoever, is that I need this question answered. If the Trumpanzees are not racist, then who the fuck is racist? Bernie and company are essentially, presumably unintentionally, telling non-whites that the racism they experience daily does not exist. How could it if almost nobody in America is racist?" I've got the story here in front of me of a law student who was looking for and believe me, when you're in law school, maybe you've got a significant other and you get a chance at a break, you want to get as far away from the law school as you can. And so she booked an Airbnb place and then asked, could she bring a couple of friends? And the person said yes. And she got ready, and there was a snowstorm. It's up in the mountains. It's like that video that Tracy put up, you know, driving up into that snowy resort area of California. And the woman all of a sudden says, "I would not rent to you if you were the last person on earth, and for one reason, one word, Asians." That's why we have Trump. But as Michael points out, that person isn't racist. That person has economic anxiety. So the racism that this woman experienced directly, she must not have experienced, because the Trumpanzees aren't racists. To go back to what Michael said, Bernie and company are essentially, presumably unintentionally, telling non-whites that the racism they experience daily does not exist. How could it if almost nobody in America is racist? That's a recipe for disaster. I stand by my argument that this is why Bernie likely would not have won, and also why he didn't win the primary race. I think it's time for Black Lives Matter to start hijacking the mic again. Bernie and company need another kick in the pants. They've grown racially tone-deaf again. They've fallen into a white slumber. That's a great image. A white slumber. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I think Black Lives Matter has another reason to hijack the mic again after the Pepsi fiasco. I try to stay away from pop culture. I really, really do. And honest to God, if a piece of the sun fell off and incinerated Caitlyn Jenner, his wife, ex-wife, whoever the hell she is, the Kim Kardashian, all the other the Kardashians, and Kendall Jenner, I would not shed a tear. But boy, I tell you what, Kendall Jenner, she saw $5 million waved in front of her not particularly talented face. And she, hey, ma, dad, the check cleared. And so Pepsi made an ad that essentially co-opted the Black Lives Matter movement because, well, commercial speech, commercialism, capitalism. It showed Caitlyn taking part in a protest, and at some point she takes a Pepsi over and gives it to a policeman, who then doesn't tase her or murder anybody. The ad has now been pulled. Yeah. Under the subject line, you say tails. Alma says, no more coat tails, only sheet tails. Oh, oh. Yeah, a little cowbell for that. And the big question is, come 2018 in the midterm elections, will Donald Trump have sheet tails? Mm-hmm. Okay, I've got some light reading for after the program, courtesy of Steve in China. Thank you, Steve. Marty saying, of the University of California with regard to that one author. Which one? There are 10 University of California campuses. Which one's he from? No. It means Berkeley if it just says University of California. Everybody else gets a hyphen and the name of the campus. I mean, except for UCLA, which doesn't have a hyphen. Under the subject line, but we're getting better at it all the time. Steve in China says, we're all racists. Some of us are just a lot more racist than others. The economic anxiety... that's a bonus. By the way, if you're convinced you're not a racist, well, then you most definitely are. It's kind of like Trump constantly saying, you know, of course I'm very smart, definitely smart, definitely, definitely smart in the driveway. If you're, I mean, does Stephen Hawking walk around? No, Stephen Hawking does not fucking walk around, Bob. God damn. Does Stephen Hawking go around saying, I'm very smart? No. Of course, you know how smart I am. I got great marks in school. No, because we know how smart Stephen Hawking is. Michio Kaku? Yeah, not either. even ordinary garden variety smart people don't walk around saying, "Now, see here, Buster, I'm smart." Only people who aren't do that. Only people who have had that reinforced to them, you know, like by mommy.
"I'm definitely smart. My mommy told me so. I graduated with top of my class from Wharton."
That won't even withstand documentary scrutiny.
Yeah. Dogman pointing out, Trump's brilliant, as long as he's in a room, alone, in the dark.
He's outstanding in his field. We don't know why, but he's there. He's outstanding in his field.
Devin just says, as long as it ain't veggie tails. Coat tails, sheet tails, veggie tails. No, I can't take veggie tails either. I couldn't agree more. It's 12 minutes past the hour. Past time for us to start the Extraordinary Ordinary Roundtable. And I did not mention at the beginning of the program, you know, usually I mention fundraising at the beginning of the program. I didn't. You know why? Because we got some amazing help last night, and we are effectively done with fundraising for this week. Now, I don't know if it's even conceivably possible, but if y'all would like to take a little bit of the stress off so that we're not sitting here going every blessed evening, we could guard to say we got $200 of fundraising to do so we can knock out more in Monday. I don't know what would happen if we ever got to the point where we actually wiped out, you know, and had a month, you know, just out there done. But could we, you know, 10 at 20, 20 at 10, 1 at 200, 2 at 100, 4 at 50, 8 at 25, 16 at 12, 50, 32 at 6 and a quarter, 64 at $3.13, and we can put that extra half penny tonight. Tonight, let's put the extra half penny toward the 24-karat gold-plated shower curtain. Okie dokie. You know, here at the mansion. So let's do fire up the Extraordinary Ordinary Roundtable and see who all wants to participate. If you never have before, remember, send a contact request on Skype to Sparky Dunk, SparkyDunc, one word, and you'll be right in medias res, in the middle of things. This is listener-supported conversation radio. I'm Bob Kincaid, and this is The Horn.
You know, I think I played this not too awfully long back, but it seems to work so well, especially given what Michael and Madison wrote about a white shadow. Well, you know, White Room, Eric Clapton, also contains the word shadow. So, on the fly, I didn't think it was too bad a call. It's Friday on the front porch on the horn, 18 minutes past the hour. And let's run right over to Sparky and see what's happening there. Hey, Sparky, how's Donnie the Rat?
Well, interesting you would ask.
Oh,
goody. The live capture trap has just arrived. Now I need someone to show me how to work it. Who just arrived?
Where are you going to take him when you live capture him?
Oh, at least 5 miles down the road.
Oh, so he can go and torment some other poor soul.
No, there's a place down the road. It's called Cone Grove Park. I'll just take him down there.
Okay. I mean, I know California's pretty liberal, but I know California's pretty liberal, but I just wanted to make sure there wasn't like a rat sanctuary.
There might be. I can look it up.
I can well imagine there probably is. And it's probably somewhere in Berkeley.
Probably. Plus, I got a shop dog for a couple days.
Oh, well, I don't know. Do you think, if you've got a shop dog, do you think that'll send Donnie the Rat into hiding?
No. He smelled where he's been the last couple of times, but I'd never seen him back then.
But like didn't your wife see him a couple of weeks ago?
No, that ended up to be a toad.
Oh.
See, we got an extra refrigerator in the laundry room, and she was doing laundry. She saw the head of the toad look out from underneath the refrigerator, scared her.
Ah, okay. Toad, rat, you know, reptile, I mean...
Yeah, we got a lot of creatures around here.
I was going to say, I mean, between the turkeys and the toads and the rats and the cattle and the...
Oh, and I got the piss scared out of me about an hour ago when the show first started.
What happened?
Two Huey cobras come streaking over the man cave. And they
Sparky,
were damn low.
What have you done?
I haven't done anything. They were heading north in a hurry.
Well, you know what? I wouldn't be surprised here if we don't see, fighter jets running training runs down the Gauley River Canyon, just to keep their skills sharp, for when the hits the fan.
Yeah, that's probably. Well, I tell.
Go ahead.
You mentioned on. On a Facebook page or maybe on a show about watching that Netflix deal about the five directors.
Oh, yeah, that was really good. I haven't seen the other two episodes yet, but the first one was real good.
Remember when they showed, I forget, it was Ford or something, had to go to the Aleutians?
Yeah, that was John Ford.
Yeah, right where the... Report from the Aleutians is called up, and he talks about Adak Island. That's
yeah.
Where my dad was stationed.
I actually thought of your dad when I saw that. I said, yeah, that's where Sparky's dad was. Mm-hmm. And of course, what just knocked me down was right at the very end, that extended little bit of footage of Mussolini.
Mm-hmm.
And he looked so similar, minus the hair issue. And if you took the hair piece, if you took the hair club for men off Trump, it'd be the same. Mm-hmm. But he looked so Trumpy that, I mean, Agnes and I were watching it together, and we both kind of went, "Damn!" So the name of the documentary on Netflix is Five Came Back. And it's a 3-episode documentary about the Hollywood directors who ran basically the propaganda effort during the Second World War, really is good. And toward the end, and I mean within the last, oh, three, 4 minutes, that footage of Mussolini, if you don't see Trump all over that, well, I don't know. But so have you watched it? Have you gotten to episode two?
Oh, I watched the whole thing.
Cool. Well, that's on the list for this weekend. I'm going to do some serious resting up this weekend. You know, like I said, not crawling up on the cross or anything, but I'm a little tired. I really, really am. And it kind of, did you see anything? Were there any notices? Why did we skip a week on Outsiders last week?
I don't know. I remember that the episode before they had skipped it. They'd had the week off. They said in 2 weeks on their advertisements that I saw. So
okay, since I watch in delay, there I didn't see that message. So
well, it might have been on when I was watching Underground. I'm still watching that. That's very good.
Well, they're back, and that's on the list. The latest episode of The Expanse is on the list. And I'm just going to binge watch all of Underground at one time. I got started, then I got sidetracked, and I'm going to get restarted. That's too good not to.
Well, they had Frederick Douglass in the last episode.
Well, you know, he's doing great things, and more people are becoming aware of his accomplishments. Fred. Yeah.
Yeah.
And I've got a sneaking suspicion based on what I'm seeing on it. I have a feeling we're going to get episode 3 of Outsiders. I sure hope we do.
Oh, you mean a third year?
Yeah. I mean, it's season 3, not episode 3.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I'll tell you what, let's move around the room a little bit. Since she had to wait so long last week, let's go to Tracy right off the bat. Hey, Tracy.
Hey, hi. How are you?
I'm just dandy. How's your week been?
It's been uneventful, just dealing with pain and all that good stuff. Other than that, I'm okay. I went to Weight Watchers yesterday, and I'm down 38 pounds.
Wow. You're doing it sanely, but you and I are neck and neck right now.
Really? Oh, well, you're doing it because you're losing weight because you can't eat.
There's that.
So, the only thing that sucks, one of the things that sucks is because of my shoulder. So, went to the doctor today, and my doctor's like, okay, well, muscle relaxants. I did get muscle relaxants, and they're kind of helping, but it's not enough. So, we're going to have to do the MRI.
Oh, no. MRI on what?
Shoulder and neck.
You have my complete and absolute sympathy. Believe me, you do.
And it's going to be an hour MRI. So that's me.
Are they civilized enough that they've got those open MRIs?
My doctor won't let me do it. He wants me to do the whole go in. And all that. The good news is anti-anxiety meds and wine.
Oh, yeah. You'd have to. My last MRI where they diagnosed my rotten cervical vertebrae, I was okay for a little while. I was just kind of pretending that boom, 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 boom noise. I was just pretending I was living inside a Pink Floyd album, Welcome to the Machine. I was waiting.
And then your foot will start itching or something, right?
No, it's worse. The tip of your nose.
Tracy, I got a recommendation for you. Ketamine. Have a bunch of it before you do that. You'll be fine.
I'm not taking special K, you fool.
Oh, that came with a you fool. We know she's serious.
Well, that's a good one. That's a cowbell worthy, Bob, no?
Absolutely.
I refuse to do another MRI without sedation. I learned the hard way.
Well, in reply to Bernie and all you white folks that think that it was this economic anxiety, I Because I'm not going to be on long because Jan and I are going out of town. We're going to San Diego. But I need white people to. So here's the situation.
I'm trying, Tracy. I'm trying.
So I have a question. Now, here's the Facebook post that I saw, and I called a friend on it. They posted, I just rent their own property, and they just rented their property up in Washington. Talked about, they expounded on how great, happy they were that they rented the place, that the people that they rented to had been in their previous place for 7 years, never late, always on time, left the place in perfect condition, and that's how they ended the first, you know, part of the post. The second part of the post was, them's the kind of folks I'd be wanting to rent to.
As opposed to those people, right?
Right. Or yeah. I'm happy that these are the kind of tenants that I have in my apartment or whatever.
So what? So they just spontaneously busted into writing in Amos and Andy?
Right. See? So then I sent a private message, and I said, I hope that your new tenants are not black. And even if they weren't or aren't, why did you find the need to break into basically Amos and Andy and put on your black face? So his reply was, really, grow the fuck up. And grow the fuck up and and I'm stupid. That was his reply.
I'll be honest, Tracy. Sometimes I worry when I'm dealing with issues of Southern politics and Southern characters,
he's from Los Angeles. He's not from the South.
I drop down into my foghorn leghorn real easy. And, you know, I would never want to be taken as, you know, engaging in Amos and Andyism.
Yeah, but I know what you meant. But you knew what I meant. That's what I'm saying. That's because I'm going.
Well, that's because I speak it.
But you speak it, but why would you start the sentence one way and end?
Yeah, see, that's where you lose me. I don't mean you lose me. That's where I get lost.
And then when I ask you about it in private, why did you get so angry? Why would you? So, I mean, because I'm not in this man's head, but when I asked the person if his tenants were black, and why would you, did I hit a nerve? Did I, you know, because this was a white man that I was talking to. Do you think I hit a nerve? When I said, you might as well have put on blackface when you went there? All like you said, all Foghorn Leghorn or Amos and Andy or Al Jolson. You know what I'm saying? When people say that there's no more racism and that the people who voted Trump aren't racist, sorry, Jason, you're wrong. Like with my brother, like we've had this conversation before, Bob, when people say, well, I can't be racist. I'm married to a black woman. My wife is such a, I love my wife. She's a fucking bigot. And I have to remind her of that a lot.
You weren't listening last night, were you?
No.
Well, we had a first-time caller, Robert from Texas, who told us that he is a man of color married to a white woman. And he said, you know, I had to school her on who Malcolm X was. Because nobody had ever bothered to tell her because, you know, it's and this
because
is
white.
Well, because white and, you know, just because not important.
Right.
No relevance. And
I had to school Jan on stuff too because no relevance. Because white. Because these are the things that in her entire world, white people's entire world, it does not matter because it does not affect their world. It does not affect their world, their beings, their consciousness. Like you was that quote that I guess that's quip that you just made about Frederick Douglass. about how...
Well, that was what Donald Trump said.
No, that's what I'm saying. Nobody laughed. I was cracking up. I got it. Because that's what D-Rump, you know, number 45 said. Because he is so... I sent you a quote or a clip, Eric Michael Dyson. What did he say about he is so... Something uncurious, blatantly uncurious.
Yeah.
Just blatantly uncurious about Black people, about the history of those United States when it's not regarding white people. And it's not just Trump, it's even with Black people, because like I said, in my history books, we were slaves. They could free us, and then there was Martin Luther King, and that is the whole breadth of
And then Barack Obama, and right.
And then Barack Obama. So that's 500 years of Black history for people.
Well, I've got two things that I want to happen in American history books now. I want an asterisk beside the name of Neil Gorsuch. If anybody ever deserved an asterisk, I mean, this far more than Roger Maris, okay? Neil Gorsuch needs an asterisk.
He's an asshole. Sorry.
And the other thing I want is I want to stop listing Barack Obama as the 44th president of the United States. I want to list him as the 43rd and 3/5 president of the United States. Because we can now, using history, we can now look back and we can see that he was not allowed to be everything that a white president would have been allowed to be. He was only allowed to have 2/3 of his Supreme Court nominees. He was not allowed to have big visions because the Congress killed those. And now we find out that, and you know, we would have been throwing a fit here. Let's be clear. I don't want to be engaged in any hypocrisy. We would have been throwing a fit if he'd lobbed missiles at Syria. Because
he would have been hollering for real.
Because, you know, blowing stuff up for peace is like fucking for chastity. And I don't know why the cruise missile liberals and the white wingers can't get that. But you cannot blast your way to happiness. And the only reason to do that at all is when your existence is threatened. But you know he wasn't allowed to be full president like a white guy would have. So, asterisk for Ann's boy, Neil, and list Barack Obama as the 43rd and 3/5 president of the United States, and list Comrade Kumquat as the 45th and 2/5 president of the United States. Because, see, he just got to do what Barack Obama wasn't allowed to do with Neil Gorsuch. And he just got to do what Barack Obama wasn't allowed to do with missiles in Syria. So that's that other 2/5 of a president that Donald Trump is getting to be. Does that make sense?
Yeah, I think Bob. I think he needs to be the 44th and 2/5 and the 45th, because he basically will be like one.
No. What, you have ciphering trouble too? He's 43 and 3. Obama is 43 and 3/5.
Right.
And Trump is 45 and 2/5. So that makes all of 44 and then 45.
Okay.
Okay, that's true. Never mind.
Well, I'm gonna get email about my cipher in here in a minute. By the way, because I get these emails from a brilliant scholar every morning about, you know, what happened this day in history. This is the birthday. Anybody want to tell me who she went on to become? This is the birthday, April 7th, 1915, of a woman who was born to a teenage unmarried mother and a teenage unmarried man. Her name was Eleonora Fagan. No Googling, but it is a significant birthday. When she died, her net worth was $750. Billie Holiday. Billie Holiday. And the historian who sends this out to me says that Frederick Douglass, and I thought about this when Frederick Douglass's name was brought up. In 1845, he described the songs of the slave quarters as hymns of bitterest anguish, ineffable sadness, and prayer and complaint. And Bob Bliss, who writes these things, said, through it all, the Holiday voice, its phrasing, its moods, kept pace, providing a modern narrative of bitterest anguish, ineffable sadness, prayer, and complaint. In July 1959, Billie Holiday died of the complications of her life. Elegant writer. Elegant writer, Bob Bliss. But I thought y'all might find that interesting. Oh, well, I've been doing this for a while, Alma, but Alma's awarded me a cowbell for white wingers. And by the way, Tracy, she says, Alma says, I so love Tracy. I wish I knew her. I so want to, I want a friend from this Horn family. Well, you've got a lot of them. You've got a lot of them, Alma. You really and for truly do. Oh, and I'm sorry, I'm corrected by Michael and Madison. Two asterisks. Bob, two asterisks. Or maybe an asterisk and one of those little dagger symbols. One for the footnote about the stolen seat and the other for the footnote about the nuclear option. If Trump somehow winds up impeached, Gorsuch gets a third asterisk. Point taken, Michael. I like the idea of the asterisk and the dagger. So let's go around and check in a little further into the room. Hey, Steve from Georgistan, what's happening, man?
Bob, what's going on, brother?
You know, for a minute there, everybody went so damn quiet, I thought I was the only one here.
Feel like you're doing it by yourself, huh?
Well, I mean...
Yeah, I just wanted to give you props. Good job filling in for Malloy.
Well, thank you. Thank you. I had some very nice emails from folks who, you know, they'd heard Mike mention me over the years and stuff, but didn't realize that this thing happened from 6 to 9 p.m. So maybe maybe some folks will come over and join in the Horn Malloy Skype chat group and the Extraordinary Ordinary Roundtable.
Some cross-advertising is always a good thing. Always a good thing. I missed Tuesday's show. I fell asleep.
I've done that. I've been known to do that to people. I'm sorry. I don't mean to. It's not intentional.
Overworked and underpaid. Fell asleep in the computer chair. It's a wonder I didn't get thrown in the floor, you know. But, Bob, I wanted to talk to you about this sixth congressional race runoff. It is really getting heated.
It looks like it's downright fun down there right now.
Oh, my God.
Now, you're not in that district, though, are you?
No, you don't have to be, though. Just turn on the TV. There's the commercial. About every break, they have one. Either, what's his name? Republican. Bear with me just a minute.
Well, I mean, hey, I'm sure he's got lots of Citizens United and dark money behind him.
Right, which is OSOFF, I believe is his name.
That's a Democrat, John Ossoff.
John Ossoff, right. He's running commercials all the time, but then he has all these CPACs that are coming out and just trashing him left and right. And what's interesting is he could actually pull this off because there's so many Republicans running against him. All he needs is 50% plus one vote to take this thing.
I've seen the polls that have him around like 40%. He's like 20% ahead of the nearest Republican. Is that pretty much what you're still seeing, Steve, or not?
Yeah, I'm going to post a link here. Yeah, that's very close, very close. But the problem is, if it comes to a runoff, he's probably going to get slaughtered.
Let me ask you this, though, Steve. This is a special election to fill Tom Price's seat. Is it only for his unexpired term?
Yes. So even if he was to win, it would only be for what? Till what, 18?
Well, until November 18.
Yep. So they're going to get, they would probably get it back. But still, the Republicans are just freaking out over this one seat thing that's going to be a bellwether signal or something. And I've never seen anything like it. It's really getting vicious.
Well, that's what Daily Coast is. I get Daily Coast emails and Progressive Change and DCCC and so forth, or PCCC. And they're really heavily trying to get people to contribute to John Ossoff's campaign. Again, the idea being that this would be a major defeat for Trump, which it would be. Although the emails have indicated that Trump only won that district by like 48-47 over Clinton. So it's starting to trend more Democratic, and it's not a really not a real pro Trump district. Ooh, at least the sense I get.
When I used to work in that area, and it was as bright blue as you could get. You know, I mean, that was Newt Gingrich's old seat, or bright red, excuse me.
Yeah, right. I know. Right. It was Newt's seat. I remember that, and it was also. After Newt, there was another. Was there another Republican, and then Price, or was it Price after Gingrich?
I think it was Price after Gingrich. If somebody wants to jump in and correct me, please feel free. But yeah, I think it was Price after. I mean, yeah, Price after Gingrich. But it would just be a major blow. I would love to see it happen, even just a short-lived victory. You know, because we get so few of them.
Well, you know, who's to say that if Ossoff wins this special election that he wouldn't also win in 18? Because, you know, typically Republicans lose, you know, the party in power in the presidency typically loses
true.
A number of House seats.
And incumbents always have that incumbent advantage, too, that you have to put into the equation.
Yeah. Yeah. And the guy seems to be pretty a very sharp guy from what I can tell.
And there's something else I wanted to throw out to everybody. You know, Trump removed Bannon from the National Security Post. Do you think that there's something behind that? And I'm directing this to Bob and just everybody. Do you think he laid his cards on the table and said, look, this is what we're going to have to do?
I don't think Trump had a goddamn thing to do with it, Steve.
Oh, okay. All right. I'm just trying to put some puzzle pieces together.
I mean, say what you will, H.R. McMaster... he's a former general, which kind of means he's a pro, all right? And he's not quite the lunatic that, say, Mike Flynn is. Michael Flynn's game was to make as much money as possible, whereas it looks like McMaster took the job because somebody had to. And see, this is one of those things that bothers me about the more... hysterical portion of our side of the debate. Everybody isn't always bad. Everybody isn't always evil. Now, when somebody does something evil, I'll say it's evil.
That's true.
But I have the sneaking suspicion that McMaster looked at Trump and said, look, I'm an expert at this. The fat, unshaven fucker over in the corner isn't. He goes or I go. Huh. You pick, Donnie.
That's a very interesting analogy, Bob, and I thank you for that perspective.
And it's all, and of course, everything's being redirected at Jared, at precious little Jared.
Yeah.
Well, there is also a consensus out that it was becoming quite evident that Trump was getting too cozy with Putin, and they had to do this ruse to kind of separate them. Do you all agree with that, or is that just too far out there?
You talking about the Syria bombing?
Yeah, yes, sir.
Well, I think it was a setup for sure. Did you listen to Randy Rhodes today? Yeah that's her opinion, yes. Too. Basically, you know,
briefly,
they were like...
I was working most of the time, but I caught snippets, yeah.
Yeah, but, you know, there were like 59 cruise missiles, and not a single missile hit any part of any airstrip on that base. you know, go back to 2003 when America attacked Iraq, and there were craters all over the airfields there. They compared and contrasted it on CNN. So it's almost as if they didn't want to hit the airstrips. And later that day, after the raid, planes were seen landing and taking off at that base. So it seems to me like a kabuki theater exercise that, this is to make Trump look tough. And it's, of course, you know, wag the dog scenario. And, it could serve as a basis for some kind of a deal between him and Putin to try to supposedly de-escalate the tensions between the U.S. and Russia, which might involve, you know, Russia getting sanctions removed and basically kicking Assad out of Syria. and Russia, of course, would get to keep Crimea. So, you know, it would make Trump look good like a peacemaker. It would give Putin what he wants because the sanctions are killing the Russian economy. And there's there's like a $1 billion deal that Exxon has with the Russian state oil company that's on hold because of the sanctions.
And when President Obama wanted to go into Syria, if memory serves me right, didn't the right and the left just both flipped out and just voted that damn pants down? I mean,
yeah, he gave a joint address to Congress asking for authorization to use military force, and only like 24 senators expressed, you know, that they would vote for it, and maybe like 34 representatives, and the rest were either against it or undecided. So he never got his authorization. He was sort of calling the bluff of the Republicans at that time, you know, and making them put their money
now they're back. Well, you know, Congress really doesn't have to act because after all, there's the authorization for use of military force, and that clearly takes in ISIS from back in 2003. When ISIS isn't even mentioned, you know, because there wasn't an ISIS.
Right.
But even that turns to ashes in their mouth.
And what did you all think of Trump's performance when he looked like he was in tears about the dying babies? Was anybody buying that?
Yeah, the poor, precious, beautiful, dying, gassed babies. They were so beautiful, the gassed babies. But, ones that didn't get gas, you little fuckers can't come here and be refugees, you Muslims.
Right. Right, talk about a double standard. Exactly, exactly.
Oh, jeez.
No, I'm not going to let go of my standing theory that there is something badly wrong with his brain. It may have always there may have always been a problem, and it may have been exacerbated by other vectors, shall we say. Absolutely, Anatole in the chat room pointing out, beautiful babies, gassed babies, the best gassed babies.
we're probably ghouls, but
we're not laughing about the babies being gassed
because,
of course, they weren't really. Ask the hysterical left and they'll tell you, false flag, we heard it from Ron Paul. It was a false flag, the babies weren't really gassed. And then the fallback position is, well, okay, if the babies were gassed, Hillary flew the plane, okay? Hillary gassed the babies.
From what I understand, there were barrel bombs doing just as much destruction as this gas ever did, you know?
Well, did you ever notice that the word...
The city of Aleppo.
Well, did you ever notice that the word barrel has an L in it, and the word Hillary has two L's?
It's not a coincidence.
She's the devil.
Go ahead, Bob. Do your thing. The devil.
You don't have the reverb.
Yeah, he's missing it.
Jeez.
But, you know, when
it really smells, though, you know, it's very suspicious. I don't, you know, we have a Russian agent in Donald Trump, and he's conducting Russia's foreign policy. So anything he does, you've got to suspect.
Well, you know? There are competing theories on that.
Okay.
One is that this is cooked up so that it'll make it look like he's being... That Trump is being tough, beautifully tough with the Russians, very tough with Putin. And so that'll take a little of the heat off over in the House Intel Committee, where Devin Nunes has been replaced by a guy who was photographed, you know, with his goddamn MAGA hat on, and who has his own history of saying crazy shit. And then over in the Senate as well, where, you know, they really, really don't want to say, you know, what really is the truth. That's one school of thought. Then there's my school of thought that says this was as much for Kim Jong Chucklenuts' benefit as anybody else's.
Muscle flexing.
That's why I played that clip from Bull Durham of, you know, throw the ball, hit the mascot. Hey, this guy's crazy. I mean, I don't know where the next ball's going to go. I really don't know.
There's been a lot of reshuffling of Trump's cabinets within the last 2 weeks. You know, people coming and going. And my question to you, Bob, and anybody else out there, you don't think that had anything to do with the bombing last night?
No. The bombing has everything to do with the fact that he keeps losing his ass. He's losing. He's doing so much losing. We're getting tired of the losing, okay? I mean, the health. This is to make people forget about Russia. This is to make people forget about health care. This is to make people forget about what a disaster his goddamn presidency has been, and we're not even at 100 days yet, okay? There's one more, though. There's one more, and it's my favorite.
Please proceed.
That this really wasn't all cooked up, that it's not just kabuki theater, that... he really did decide to stand up to Pooty Poot. And that as time passes, he'll have to do something else. He'll have to escalate. And that eventually, Pooty Poot won't respond with a thermonuclear missile. Pooty Poot won't respond with boots on the ground or going after the American Special Forces or what the hell ever they are in Iraq. Pooty Poot will just release the videos. You know.
Whoa, the wee wee video.
Special wee wee videos.
Yeah,
or maybe the video that we keep hearing about from St. Petersburg that has Donald Trump sticking his in like a 13-year-old child.
Oh, jeez.
Wow.
Well, his buddy in New York who was convicted of that stuff, he used to go to parties. I forget the guy's name. A real reprobate. He and Don were best buddies. They would go to these sex parties with underage girls. Well known.
My daughter is so hot. She's 15 and she's so hot. If she wasn't my daughter, I'd date her.
Oh, Jesus Christ.
The way he stroked her and kissed her at the convention was just creepy. I can't get that out of my head, man. Bob Cletus is digging at my leg. She's got to go out, so I'm going to toss it back to you guys for a little bit.
All right. Well, Cletus is a good girl. She says when she's got to go out, that's a very good puppy. And hate a Twiggy, too, who doesn't get nearly enough press.
Yeah. I'll be back.
All right, and in the meantime, seeing as we're coming up on the 8 o'clock hour, I would like to send out some thanks. Thanks very kindly to Larry, and thanks to Greg in Memphis for helping out this evening. Thank you very much indeed. That means we got $175 to go on Monday's fundraising, trying to get, you know, like a day in front.
So thank you to Greg, and thank you to Larry. Thank you very much. Thank you very kindly. Anybody else wants to jump in? That's cool, too. Jack in Shreveport writes in, Trump presented with plan to place nukes in South Korea. A story from the Hill. Oh, goody. That'll be nice. That'll make the Chinese and the North Koreans feel ever so special. Ever so cared for. Mm-hmm. That'd be kind of like Russians putting nuclear missiles in, I don't know, Cuba. Wait a minute, Cuba. Let's see. We haven't heard from Snork this evening. Are you there, Snork?
Yeah, can you hear me?
Just Andy.
Yeah, no, I'm out here Monday. We have Joni Ernst speaking in my area, and I plan on attending.
Oh, goody. Do you have your bail money?
Actually, the last couple, when she was confronted, she actually backed off on her position on several items, and her attacks in Iowa might have been a major push for why the to take the heat off of her. They might have canned the push on the taking away her health care. Because the Iowans right now are finally coming together and just railing on them. And this will be one of the few that she's actually going to attend in person, not a representative. And she's taking a lot of heat, and a lot of the Republicans in this state are taking heat for sending representatives only to the meetings so they don't have to be confronted. And this one is taking place in a very distant town in the north that's almost inaccessible to almost all Iowans.
Well, Hoghead is reminding you, be sure to put bread sacks on your feet, Snork.
Yeah. I had been thinking of taking kitty litter.
Remember, Joni said she was raised a poor white child, and she had to wear bread sacks on her feet in the cold, cruel, winter, frigid, freezing months of Iowa.
Well, I believe her there, because we had to, too. That's not a being poor thing. That's an Iowa thing.
Did she have to wear the bread sacks on her feet as she was castrating the hogs or not, Sark? Do you know?
Usually you wore boots for that.
It would be kind of fun if everybody could bring a pig for her to castrate.
Oh, there you go.
Well, this area,
sweet.
Yeah, it has pigs up there. Again, it's in a place called Elkader, which
my favorite town in Iowa.
Doesn't even look like the rest of Iowa.
Well, it's named after a man who would, in the current lexicon, be referred to as a terrorist. He was a freedom. Well, he was a North African freedom fighter against the colonial French. He was admired. Yeah. He was admired by Abraham Lincoln. And he was so admired that when the little town was founded, they named it after him.
Well, a lot of the towns don't even know their local history. I didn't know that myself.
Muhammad El Qadr. His is a fascinating story.
But it is interesting that it does show that they are feeling the heat, because they are frightened to appear not wanting to go, and they are frightened to appear anywhere like near Des Moines where they think people will actually show up.
So maybe they feel safe there?
Yeah. A very tiny town. If she wanted to represent her constituency, you'd think she'd at least show up near where a majority of the Iowans are. But she's shown up in like an outpost that almost resembles Wisconsin more than Iowa. And again, it's far from any of the large cities.
You know, Snork, I think you should wear like a large safety pin on your shirt at that rally to let Joni know that she's safe there in Elkader, you know? You know, the poor oppressed white woman, you know, the poor oppressed white senator from, you know, Iowa, right?
Yeah.
Well, you've also got other big fun taking place in Iowa, your state house. Governor Terry Branstad, if he doesn't already, will soon have a bill on his desk, passed in both houses of the legislature, that includes a stand-your-ground law.
Ooh, just what we need.
And also gives the right to carry concealed firearms on the grounds of the state capitol. In addition, because what could possibly go wrong, the bill also lets kids younger than 14 use handguns as long as there's a parent or guardian supervising.
Bob, it seems to me, didn't Governor Branstad sign a bill that allows blind people to have firearms in Iowa, as I recall?
What makes me think you're probably right, yes.
Yeah.
Actually, there was almost a takeover by an Iowa Association by the Blind. They used to run all the concessions in the basement of the a Capitol building, and one of them had a fascination for guns, collected a large number of guns, I'm not exactly, this was a long time, Branstad was governor, and then he wasn't governor for 30 years, and then he became governor again, but the last time Branstad was president, there was like a blind uprising in the Capitol building of some blind people that thought they could take over the Capitol.
I didn't hear about that. That's funny.
So it's allowing the blind to have guns here is a major a major point.
So people are in favor of that then, because, I mean, what could go wrong, right, with blind people having guns? Just, you know, Iowa should let convicted felons have guns. If they're while they're at it, don't you think so, Snark?
Oh yeah.
I mean, what could happen there? You know.
Well, and by the way, once this bill is signed into law, it will allow any good God fearing, upstanding, Bible believing, Christ centered, evangelical, gun fundamentalist, homosexual in Iowa to sue any city or any county in Iowa that tries to create a gun free zone. Like, say, there's an elementary school that says, this here is a gun-free zone. And it's right next to the sign that says, this here is a tobacco-free zone. Well, a good God-fearing, upstanding, Bible-believing, Christ-centered, evangelical, gun-dementalist, homosexual, Iowegian, can sue to make sure that that school is a goddamn Second Amendment paradise-free far zone. Oh, and by the way, not too terribly far from Iowa? How far is Janesville from Iowa?
About 208 miles.
Yeah, it's not terribly far. I mean, 70 miles an hour, that's 300. That's 3 hours. There is, last I checked, a manhunt underway. A Janesville, Iowa guy robbed, because I could not make this up if I desperately tried, robbed the Armageddon Gun Shop in Rock County, Wisconsin, when he robbed the Armageddon Gun Shop, he stole what is described by WISN Channel 12 as at least 16 high-end firearms. He also delivered a pro-Trump manifesto that was full of what's described as anti-government rhetoric. And the police chief of Janesville, David Moore, said, I can tell you that we don't know where Mr. Jakubowski is. He could be around Janesville. He could be around Rock County. He may not even be in Wisconsin. So, in Iowa, that's just fine, because we wouldn't want to have any gun-free zones. So if he comes to Iowa, maybe he'll be, you know, right at home. The manifesto he sent to Trump, 160 pages of good, God-fearing, upstanding, Bible-believing, Christ-centered, evangelical, gundamentalist, amosexual. Exciting, huh?
Yeah, we also just had like $1 billion of state surplus disappear and become gifts to out-of-state corporations that don't even operate here.
Because freedom.
Yeah. That's probably going to be a major point in the next election.
I would imagine. I would imagine. Hey, I just got a note from Steve in Georgistan. Little Cletus went out and went to digging around, and she dug up some bones. Cletus is an awfully nice puppy. And so what Steve would like to do would be to put a $25 challenge on the table and hopefully have it met. Steve with a note says, how cool would it be if we didn't have to worry about fundraising on Monday? We need you concentrating on more important issues. Well, that's the thing. We'll still fundraise on Monday, but we'll be doing it for Tuesday. Instead of constantly trying to keep up, we can try to get out front a little bit. And so if Steve and Cletus and Twiggy and Ms. Karen's challenge is met, that will mean that we will be down to $125 to go fundraising-wise for More In Monday. So thank you, Steve and Ms. Karen and Cletus and Twiggy, who doesn't get nearly enough press. So thanks one and all. Well, I didn't mean to just put a stick in the spokes of the conversation. What else?
Not all. That's about all that's going on in Iowa.
That's it? It's not that tiny a state.
I've been sick the last week, and I really just ate for the first time in 5 days, so I kind of know how you're feeling.
It's been brutal, and I'm eating a lot. Okay, this is where my life is. I got really excited at the grocery store today. I found a new flavor of yogurt. I know, but I did. And so I had to try it. Chobani now has a pomegranate-flavored yogurt. So, you know, I got two little cups of it. Didn't want to commit to much more than that. Because, you know, I know what I like. My favorite these days is the banana cream. That's delightful. Really tasty. Okay, this must be one of those uncomfortable lapses in conversation.
I thought I was muted. so much going on in the news, and so much of it unsubstantiated that I don't even know where to comment. So, I'd like to see more news coming in. I know a lot of progressive YouTube is being cut off and defunded. So, we have no net neutrality anymore. All of our data is going to be sold. That doesn't leave us in some good spots.
Now, that doesn't mean they could sell, like, your banking information as far as what you plug in to pay your bills every month. That's encrypted, isn't it?
I'm no attorney, and I don't know that right now that those protections might have been limited as well. I don't know that they're challenged. that would be a major impact to the economy if people suddenly couldn't trust the transactions. But realistically, I didn't see any mention of restrictions. And encryption right now is limited to the point where it's not really even capable of being that good.
Well, how could they pull off all these ransom viruses and all that? That government encryption, and they were making, you know, like police stations pay out these huge ransoms to unlock their computer. Nobody could crack it.
Right. They're not using the same low level of encryption that most of the banks are using, except for the banks that are using what's called blockchain. And personally, I think our voting should be required to be blockchain.
Absolutely. So just because you see an S behind your HTTP, you shouldn't rest comfortably anymore, huh? Is that what you're telling me?
Yeah, should not. And, you know, even when I was making government servers, we were constantly reminded of how we had to keep our encryption down. That it would be criminal for us to send our encryption stuff to anyone that wasn't an American.
And then they've got everybody sucked in. Everybody I know pays their bills online. It's so much easier than have to physically write a check, put a stamp on it, mail it off, go to the mailbox. You know, it's so much easier. Click, 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 click. You get a receipt and you're done.
Yeah.
So that could be our financial undoing, if I'm hearing.
Well, it's sorry. I mean, PayPal, from the standpoint of, you know, how we run things here, PayPal is a hell of a lot more convenient. No offense, than the check arrives, Boss Man Wayne picks up the check, Boss Man Wayne then puts the check in the mail to the wait and the two, and you know it turns into a 3-week process.
Oh, no offense taken by Karen. They're making all their money through Amazon, Bob. That changed the game, man.
Well, who are?
The post office. They're making all their money through Amazon now.
Oh, yeah. Now, here...
I can't say all, but at least... I don't know. I'm not authorized to spew these numbers out. But let me say a lion's share of their profits are coming through Amazon, and yes, they are making a profit if they don't have to pre-fund retirement for people that aren't even born yet. So let's just get that out of the way.
Now, the post office out here, no matter what you say, they're an awfully efficient organization. Yep. Amazon or UPS and DHL cannot even compete with the efficiency of the UPS or the post office out here. And out in Iowa, unlike the larger towns, UPS just gives up a lot of times. They'll send a truck here. But three quarters of the packages that I get, actually, the UPS...
they hand it off.
They'll take them to Des Moines and give them to the post office.
Yeah, and they hand it off.
And it'll get here before my UPS delivery coming from the same place.
Daryl Issa did his damnedest to shut down the post office, and then Amazon exploded, and he doesn't even mention it anymore, you know, so
Amazon could not be profitable if they didn't have the post office taking 2/3 of their load.
Hey, Snork, what you said about Amazon being, what you said about YouTube being defunded, are you referring to the fact that YouTube has said it will no longer run ads on videos with less than 10,000 views?
No, I was referring to their blacklist that lists people that say the words gay, anything against Trump, any non-conservative position, that they're not running any ads on them.
Okay, because I did see the story saying that they were pulling ads from any video that had under 10,000 views.
Mm.
Now, well, I guess now, let's say that the horn was doing YouTube video. Well, we're probably not going to get 10,000 views. So that means we're not going to be able to raise revenue from it. On the other hand, it's not going to touch the Young Turks, who measure their views in the millions.
But they're not getting it either. They're even saying that they're not getting it either. A lot of these places that are saying they get 400,000 views a night are saying that they have been, they're having people that wanted specifically to advertise on them, and they're being told by the intermediary called AdWords is the company, that they've been told that they cannot place anything on their sites.
Hmm.
They have a list of sites that they cannot do anything to provide funding for.
Well, I mean, I remember when something similar was done to Air America back in the early part of this century.
Mm-hmm.
There was a list of, you know, a list of advertisers who absolutely under no uncertain terms were you to advertise, were you to run these ads on any Air America programming.
In this case, it's not the advertisers. The channel is saying that you cannot use AdWords if your clients cannot select these programs.
Weird. I'll have to read up on that. I'll probably get emails.
Yeah, the intermediary company is AdWords.
Yeah, Google AdWords and Google AdSense, right.
Hmm. I was going to mention, I was listening to the David Pakman program on Progressive Voices after Malloy. I think after he did Malloy, one of these, maybe on Monday or Tuesday, I'm not sure which day. And David Pakman was saying how his revenue had, like, from YouTube was cut off, apparently because of this whole thing.
Yeah, his same. That's where I believe the first one I heard it from was, and I started looking for others. Okay. And 50% of his income was from that. And he's the one that the company, he called AdWords and asked which one of his, what word did he say? Because he maintains a large list of words that he will not say on his show just to prevent any triggers. And he was trying to figure out what did he say, what did he do. And he was told by AdWords, no, you were canned by somebody else that said, we can't give anybody to you. Even the companies that are requesting to be placed on your site.
I think it's probably because he said the word gay. Who knows?
Well, what would stop him from going directly to the advertiser and saying, we'll run it during the show?
I don't know. Can you run your own ads?
I don't know. I've never fooled with YouTube.
I'm guessing.
I don't think you can. I think it's controlled by YouTube.
Yeah, I think the ads have to be through YouTube. And I don't know. Maybe we're going to have a Google boycott.
Sounds like a lawsuit might be in order as well. Maybe a restraint of trade of some sort.
Well, remember these things have equal and opposite effects. For instance, Bill O'Reilly. Yeah. Is hemorrhaging advertisers right now, kind of the way that Limbaugh did a couple of years ago. And what happens is the advertisers get with their buyers. You know, the companies don't buy their own ads. They go through media companies that do that for them. And the ad buyer will say, well, you know, listen, this is all opinionated stuff. And, okay, you Mercedes-Benz, you were running ads on Bill O'Reilly, but you were also running ads on Rachel Maddow. Well, you're going to have an image problem if you pull your ads from Bill O'Reilly, but they keep running on Rachel. So why do you even want to run ads on these things when you can easily reach as many people running it on a soap opera or ESPN said, or something like that.
Pakman said he was contacted because he had people that wanted to exclusively advertise on Pakman's show.
But I mean, that's generally how it plays out.
They didn't want to be removed from M Show. They only wanted their ads to be presented on Pacman's show.
Right, but meanwhile, Google owning YouTube and AdWords says, you know what? Our best bet is probably just to get away from advertising on all of these political shows altogether, because you can't make anybody happy.
I didn't realize, does Alphabet own AdWords too?
Yeah. It's all Google.
I think that's what happened after Rush Limbaugh was attacking Sandra Fluke like 3 days in a row, and he lost all his advertisers. And I think advertisers in general started to desert, you know, political talk radio.
And then
shows.
They ran away from progressive radio too.
Mm-hmm.
And if I could dare to inject the horn into this little discussion, that's why there aren't any here. If we can keep things going, and I don't feel like I need a Gulfstream 5, then we're going to keep going. You see what I'm saying? But an advertiser, by virtue of the privileged position that it occupies, being the money, programs that run advertising will find themselves self-censoring, even without a complaint from the advertiser. They'll just make sure, they'll look at something and go, you know, I don't know. Maybe that's not that important a story. And it goes to the back burner. And this is a good time to remind people that commercial broadcasting looks like something that it isn't. Commercial broadcasting looks like it's giving you a program. But it isn't. What commercial broadcasting does is give you to advertisers. I mean, that's why there are ads in the middle of crappie fishing today over on the Redneck channel. Because there may only be a couple of 100,000 people watching it, but you damn well want to sell soap powder to them too. Or car wax or whatever. The purpose of commercial broadcasting is to deliver potential consumers to potential businesses.
Absolutely.
And whatever happens in between the ads is just whatever happens in between the ads.
Right. I mean, TV was invented to sell shit to consumers, basically, not to entertain people. People don't get that. You know, that was the whole purpose for, you know, broadcast to television, you know?
And if you get caught in the grinding wheels, regardless of the source of the malfeasance, you're going down too. That's why Limbaugh pulled down a lot of good people, didn't he, Bob?
Well, yeah, exactly. Because when they hemorrhaged away from Limbaugh, they hemorrhaged away from progressives as well.
Exactly.
Because you know, long before there was ever the Flush Rush or whatever that campaign was, and you know, I experienced it on a little tiny small town local level. If you dared to be on commercial broadcasting and you said something that the advertiser who runs his ads in the 9 a.m. slot and you're on at 7 p.m., they still feel privileged to call up the general manager and, God damn it, I want that commie off the fucking air or I'll never buy another goddamn ad from you again. You understand me? And there you go. I got disappeared from terrestrial broadcasting because I started taking on Mountaintop Removal and Massey Energy.
I remember that back in the day.
And then I wasn't there anymore.
You were only on terrestrial for like a year, right, Bob?
Close to two.
Okay.
A year and a half.
Yeah.
But you got enough of it just to give you a bitter taste.
Well, no, I mean, I've been in terrestrial broadcasting off and on since I was 15 years old. 16.
You started out with TBS, correct?
No, I started out with a crappy little gospel radio station in Alabama.
Well, we didn't go into this on the last reunion show.
I've told that story a million times.
Well, I missed it. I apologize.
Yeah, we barely talk good. And, you know, from there, bounced around to most of the radio stations, you know, worked during Christmas breaks, worked during summer holidays, that kind of thing. And fell in love with the medium. But it is an ugly, ugly, ugly business.
And it will eat.
I mean, go and watch George Clooney's Good Night and Good Luck.
Yeah.
About Edward R. Murrow.
Murrow, yep.
And you'll see what miseries Murrow had to deal with just because the advertisers didn't like the fact that he was challenging the Red Baiters.
Another good watch, maybe a little bit off point, is Network.
That's its own piece of brilliance, Paddy Chayefsky. Yeah.
Right. Right.
Yeah. Well, I have happy news. Laborman Gary out in New Mexico said, "I'll cover that challenge and I'll put what's left on the challenge table to cover the Morans on Monday." So he covered your and Ms. Karen and Twiggy and Cletus's. They're such good puppies. Challenge. So that took us down to 1.25. And then there's another challenge on the table to finish out Moran Monday. So thank you very kindly, Gary. Thank you, Labor Man. Much obliged.
Bob?
Yes, Billable Rick.
It just so happens that my Cocoa Bear, who is not here at the office with me, dug up a little treasure in the backyard as well.
Oh, is Cocoa Bear a good puppy?
Cocoa Bear is a very good doogie. She does not let anybody near my son when he sleeps. She barks at me if I try to, like, you know, get close to the bed when my son is asleep. So anyway, Cocoa Bear found $25 in that little treasure box. So I'll throw that in.
Well, thank you very kindly. So that'll meet the remainder. And I think unless my ciphering is way the hell off, I think we're done with Moran Monday. And that's awesome. So that means on Monday we can work on Tuesday, which is huge. I mean, just having a one-day cushion makes the breathing just a little easier.
So, Bob, do we have time for any frivolity here?
Yeah, let me share an email real quick.
Okay.
Alma has a note. "I just ordered The Mature Mind by H.A. Overstreet and am sending it to you. This may be a book you've already read. I haven't. My father had this book, though it's mine now. I'd like to discuss it with you. Copyright 1949. I got a lot of my father's books after his death. So I'm looking forward to reading that. Just out of curiosity," Alma asks, "how should Horn listeners protect their privacy? Is there any internet protection that we know of that would let listeners interact without some sort of snooping?" And I am far from the guy to be asking that. But in the long run, it's pretty difficult, isn't it?
I think that's a question for Snork to answer myself.
Yeah, yeah.
Snork is indisposed right now.
Oh, okay. Well, you were chiming in on it too, Steve. Ideas?
Just use the highest rate encryption that you can. And there are ways where you can right click and find out, you know, if it's encryption, to have a certificate. And, but, you know, I'm a layman, Bob, and I don't want to give people any false sense of security. What the hell do I know, man?
I've heard that you can use what's called a VPN, which is called a virtual private network.
Yeah.
But then that might be your best bet for privacy.
Hey, get over here.
That's yeah. not me. But then your VPN knows all your information, and they could sell it. You know, it never stops, man.
Well, I think the idea is that if you have a virtual private network, that you alone
new,
can sell
new
it,
handle.
You know? New holder?
No, I gotta fix that.
Sounds like somebody's in the dungeon there, whipping something.
Oh, sorry about that.
That's okay.
Bob, you had a hostile email you were telling us about earlier, and I'm looking at a movie.
I mean, it wasn't hostile. It was, you know, just...
Somebody was saying they were going to come to...
You know, just another
pissed off... West Virginia and call you out, but... I don't know, Bob. You might not take that serious. You ever seen the movie Talk Radio?
I think I've seen that. But those were Klansmen, not. I mean, what's a fucking Stein voter going to do to me? Come and throw goddamn glitter at me?
Probably so.
No, I'm talking about not the long email. You talked about one from before that. Somebody.
That's another proud Stein voter.
Oh, is it going to come to West Virginia and call? Yeah. I just, you know, you need to take threats like that seriously, friend.
I had a Pizzagate.
It does happen. It does happen.
I had I think I told you all that I joined a Pizzagate group for a few days just to see how insane they were on Facebook. And I had somebody threatening to come from like North Carolina or whatever to, you know, to beat my ass, you know, so never happened, you know.
Well, Bob's so far in the hills, they never find him anyhow. But still, man, you know, the kind of crap concerns me. There's too many nutcases out there.
There are a lot of nutcases. I mean, like that guy who shot up the Comet Pizza Ping Pong restaurant, you know, from North Carolina, drove from North Carolina to D.C. thinking that there were, you know, children being held in a cellar underneath the restaurant, you know.
And then it tells you the amount of money.
Well, that's how Neil Bortz got his job. He just waited for a national syndicated talk radio show to get taken out, and he was sitting there the next day. He was a regular call-in, and the rest is history. My God, what a blight on the earth that son of a bitch was. I don't know if you're familiar with him or not. Hopefully not.
Is he still broadcasting?
No, he's retired. Bob, have you heard of him?
I've heard of him, Neil Bortz,
Yeah.
Oh, Jesus, Neil Bortz. Yeah.
Yeah, Billy Bass, Karen calls him, was like a fish. But he presented himself as a libertarian, and out of the gate 20 years ago, you could kind of say, yeah, that makes sense. But then he went just totally off the frickin' rails on the right, man. But that's how he got his job. He was laying in wait for somebody to croak. So
who croaked?
You know, I'm going to have to research that.
Just some, you know, third or fourth string conservative talker probably, huh?
Right. And I don't know how or what, but if you'll give me a minute, I'll find out for you.
Cool. So let me talk about a little frivolity, if I may, Bob.
Do please.
My son and I just purchased tickets to the Classic West, which is going to be held at Dodger Stadium. It's like a two-night rock festival in July, mid-July. The first night is featuring the Eagles as the lead band, which I understand is now, Bob Seger has taken over Glenn Frey's, you know, vocals role there with the band. And then Steely Dan and the Doobie Brothers, okay. And then the second night, the lead act is Fleetwood Mac with Journey and Earth, Wind & Fire after Fleetwood Mac. So,
wow.
Should be a good show. And there's also an East Classic, which I think is in New York City, which features the same six bands, which I, if I'm not mistaken, it's maybe going to be in June. So maybe we can all pitch in for you and Agnes to, you know, to send Bob to the Classic East or something like that in New York City.
Oh, that would be cool.
Yeah. Yeah, so I figured I've seen the only two of those bands I've seen the Doobie Brothers and Journey. But I haven't seen the other four, so I figured, oh, what the heck, you know, this is, you know, this would be a good show. So my son got tickets for us. We're sitting like not quite the nosebleed seats, but I didn't want to pay too much, you know. So we're like in the bleachers, not the upper deck, but the one below the upper deck. But it should be a good show. Looking forward to it.
That sounds like a blast.
Yeah, it will be. It will be. What I'd like to do is I'd like to just maybe find a motel nearby so I don't have to drive. I mean, it's only like maybe 10, not even 10 miles from my, well, maybe 12 miles from my home. But I'd like to not have to drive back afterwards, you know, both nights. Just get wasted and just, you know, crash at a cheap motel or whatever, you know. Be kind of fun, though. So, yeah, so it'll be, be a good show. I heard Bill Walton was talking about it on a, I think even before it was announced, on a, you know, when he was commentating for UCLA against Arizona or something like that. And I said, really? Seeker is going to be taking over for Glenn Frey on the Eagles? Wow, okay, that's cool. So you had obviously heard of that. How about?
I had heard, yeah, I'd seen a, like I said, I don't go trolling around in pop culture, but I had seen that.
Okay. Yeah, because Seeger had his, what he called his rollout tour, his like farewell tour, like a couple of years ago, and I missed that, actually. So maybe, hopefully the Eagles will play some Seeger songs, too. That would be very nice, you know?
Yeah, there's a couple. I'm not a big Seeger guy.
Okay. Well, I don't know. I did
love that song, Main Street.
Oh yeah.
And yeah. You remember Roll Me Away?
Oh, that's great. Yeah.
And Fire Lake.
Yeah.
Okay, I guess I'm a Seeger fan of a little bit.
How about that old time rock and roll? You like that or not?
Nah, that's overplayed. No, it's just that it's kind of. I don't know. It just comes across as phony to me.
Okay.
And the other one I can't stand is On a Long and Lonely Highway, East of Omaha. I wrote this song about how shitty my life is, even though I'm raking in money hand over fist. I fucking hate that song.
What about Kathmandu? Do you like that?
Yeah, I guess the same way that I like the Beach Boys' Kokomo. It's a song about a place that has absolutely nothing to do with anything in the song.
Okay, that's true. Oh, let's see. What about Hollywood Nights? I love that song.
Eh.
Yeah, I moved out to California when that song came out, so maybe that's why I like it so much.
Well, I didn't realize this. Andy the Angry Jew just wrote in and said, Bob Seger brought Glenn Frey into the biz. He sang on Ramblin' Gamblin' Man.
Oh, okay. Didn't know that. Wow. The knowledge that this community has, Bob, I tell you, it's amazing.
I try to learn some. I like to learn something new every day, and by the time airtime rolls around, I generally get my wish in the 3 hours of the program.
So, Rick, hold on. So you're actually going to that show? A friend of mine, Alfonso, bought tickets to that show.
Yeah.
He's sitting in the nosebleed. Well, he's not. Because his birthday's in July.
Yeah.
That show, Jan, the one that I was talking about in Dodger Stadium that I would never go, that we wouldn't go to because I'm not going to spend, not because of the money, but I... Jan and I don't do crowds, over crowds. I'm claustrophobic, and all those people on the, you know, and all those people But it sounds like a great show. I mean, come on, you got the, what is it, the Doobie Brothers? And
yeah, the Doobies.
And
Earth, Wind, & Fire, Steely Dan.
And Steely Dan and Journey.
Fleetwood Mac.
And it's over 2 days, right?
Yeah, it's a 2-day festival, yeah. Yeah.
Well, it's going to be a blast. But I can't.
Yeah, it starts at like 5 o'clock. And my guess is the first act is probably from like 5 to 7. Then they break for a half an hour. And then they go from like maybe 7:30 to 9:30. And then they probably go from 10 till midnight or something like that. The last act is my guess, you know. They probably build in about 2 hours of music per show, per band. They may or may not take the full 2 hours. But, you know, that's probably allocated that way, you know. So,
I mean, that's the kind of stuff I could do at home. Because if I do it at home, then I can get up, go to my bathroom, I can put it on pause.
Yeah. Well, but yeah, but you're not going to get the full live music experience, though. I guess you
don't
could just buy the CD.
Yeah, don't care. No, see, I remember back toward the end of the 20th century, my father and I thought it would be really, really cool to get, you know, be a father-son kind of thing. We'd get season tickets to the Mountaineer Games, and we went to a couple of them, and after that, I was like, okay, Dad, Saturday coming up, ready to go? Said, nope, going to sit right here. I got the best seat in the stadium right here.
Yeah,
the popcorn's cheaper, the beer's colder.
Colder, uh-huh, and you don't to fight anybody to get to the bathroom.
You got a cushion. You got a cushion to support your back and your ass, you know?
See, and now we have TiVo. So if you got to go to a bath, make a beer run, refrigerator run, or whatever, toilet run, hit that bitch on pause, and you're good. You know? And Jan, just because we're stuck on the freeway. We're on our way down to San Diego. Man, she just asked me, hey, since, you know, when the Easter Sunday baby, you want to know if Tracy Porter, wanted to go to a Dodger game. And I just looked at her like, yeah, okay. I mean, I've gone to Dodger games. I usually save my Dodger experience for gay days because I'm a lesbian. So I'm obligated to go to
no
Dodger
shit,
games.
Tracy. Really?
Yeah,
you are?
And I'm black. I don't know if that's
that. Oh, no. Seriously?
Seriously.
As promised.
And there's no racism in America anymore. So
let me break it here real quick.
That's what John Roberts says, so he must be right. Chief Judge, how could he be wrong?
How could he be wrong?
Right.
As promised, two ports replaced was a guy named Herb Elfman, who committed suicide, and he was waiting at the door the next day. So, and I just posted links into that. I just promised you.
Yeah, they ran him up here on the right wing AM station.
Yep.
For something like maybe a year.
And I'm sorry to interrupt, but I promised you guys I would dig down on that and find out. So,
yeah.
Don't
yeah.
back to you.
You
want to
talk to me?
Uh-oh.
Everybody be quiet. Are you muted, Rick? Okay. Hopefully. Okay. Okay. I think we're good.
God, Quartz is Lanny.
This question came in via Twitter a little bit ago, and I just now saw it. And this is a tough one, and probably not something we can handle in 13 minutes. But this is one for us to chew on maybe later. I know that a state isn't constitutionally protected from seceding, but is the same true during a constitutional convention? Can a state opt out? And that question becomes a bit of a mess. A state is forbidden from seceding. The Supreme Court kind of took care of all of that after the little dust-up in 1861. Now, what happens during a constitutional convention?
Jesus Christ.
That question is sort of like asking what happens inside a black hole. Nobody knows. The only thing we have to go on is what happens the last time there was one, and there's only been one. And that was a situation whereby the Articles of Confederation said that you had to have unanimous consent in order to amend the Articles of Confederation. And if you, well, this is a question for Dr. Bill. They went by fits and starts. There was an Annapolis convention, and Maryland wouldn't even allow a delegate to go to it. So eventually they get all 13 states in Philadelphia gathered together. And Madison and Hamilton and the Constitution, the people who wanted a Constitution, knew what they were doing. They had a plan. And so the minute that it gaveled in, all bets were off. And the first thing they did was ditch the Articles of Confederation, whether anybody liked it or not, and said, we're going to work on a Constitution here. Screw the Articles of Confederation. You ever notice there's nothing in the Constitution that says the foregoing Articles of Confederation are hereby null and void? There's a reason. And so they then just, you know, kind of took off and started doing their own thing and trying to come up with a form of government that would provide a reasonably non-dysfunctional federal structure that would leave the sovereignty of the states largely intact. And so, could a state opt out of the union in a constitutional convention? Maybe. So that's a hell of a technical answer, but maybe. Anything can, I mean, because, see, that's what's so scary about this Article 5 convention and what is so misguided about these Wolfpack people who say, yeah, I want one of those, is that once it's gaveled in, it doesn't matter how many times Mark Levin, with his voice made for print, shrieks that we're only going to do this for a balanced budget amendment and to protect the little fetuses and religious liberty, and then we're out. All it takes is one asshole going, Mr. Speaker! Mr. President! And game on. And I don't know about anybody else, but I don't trust a bunch of delegates from a bunch of Koch brothers bought and paid for Republican state legislatures who are in the majority to be at all solicitous of the wants or needs of those who ain't. And so when they say, well, okay, I think, you know, the Wolfpack people, I think it'd be a great idea to have an Article 5 convention, and we could go in and we could get rid of Citizens United. You stupid fucks. They're going to go in and get rid of you. Because once the gavel goes down, the balloon goes up. You know, there where they're holding the convention in the Koch Brothers Memorial Coliseum or whatever. So I know that's not much of an answer, but it's some kind of an answer. Sparky must be putting together the Donnie trap.
Evidently. Oh,
sorry, I was spaced out.
Happens.
The Donnie trap is already set where Donnie has been hanging out behind a kind of a fake wall that I got. He's been hiding stuff up there. I found because I eat peanuts out here, and I throw them in the garbage, and he's been getting in the garbage and getting the peanut shell.
Because peanut shells is good food.
But anyway, there's a pile of them over behind this fake wall, and the trap fit perfectly in there. So if he runs it along, there's a little flap that lets him in, and he can go grab all the peanuts he wants, but he can't get out. From either end. He can come in from either end, but he can't get out.
So that's what all that racket was. Sounded like
it's the rat. It's the rat hotel. Rats come in, rats check in, but they can't check out.
I thought he's building an Amish barn or something out there.
No, the man cave's more like an Amish barn than anything else.
I hear you, bro.
That's why the rat lives in here.
You got to get rid of him. And you're really going to just carry him off, huh?
Down to the cruelty free vegan rat sanctuary. Absolutely.
He's a rodent. I mean, we catch mice, how they're cute as hell, but
hey,
I certainly ain't gonna let him loose.
Yeah. Him. Kill it. Kill it dead. Fuck that shit. Kill it dead.
Hey, I appreciate your soft heart and everything, but damn, you gotta draw a line somewhere, man.
Yeah, I just Jan was like, she's repeating it over and over again. Rats. I appreciate the pacifist and all that in you. Fuck you. Kill the motherfucker. I'm sorry.
Now, let's not be specious.
Damn, Tracy, it sounds like you're ready to bring in the B-52s Sparky used to work on in Napalm's man cave.
Napalm that bitch. I'm sorry. No, when we moved into the house, they had to did some work and let some things, some boards open. And when it rained, we had a couple of those bitches that came in the house. And they would come in and stare at and laugh at me. Nah, bitch. Uh-uh. No, they had to go. It was either me or the rats. I'm still here, bitch. So, no, they had to go.
He can't help it. He was born a rat, right, Duncan?
Tracy, the general Westmoreland of the rodent species.
Speciesism is just another form of hatred.
Oh, you guys are funny.
They are nasty, and they carry disease. I am sorry. I'm going to build a wall. I'm siding with them. I'm not siding with them. Build a fucking wall. Keep them out.
And they don't have a bladder, so they drag around a trail of urine behind them.
See,
you know, that's
that
one reason enough.
That's some nasty shit.
You know,
see right there.
You know what's fun?
They don't have a fucking bladder. See, that's some nasty ass shit.
You know what's fun?
Go ahead, Bob.
When you've got a gas-fired oven that's got a pilot light, so it's always warm and toasty inside the insulation in the oven.
My grandmother used to do that.
And you don't know a mouse has gotten in there.
Oh, no.
And you go and you go to, you know, you set it for about 350. That's what cake bacon is, right? About 350. And after a while, you and your newlywed bride begin to look at each other going, God damn, there's something wrong with that cake. Shit.
It ain't me.
Another nice fact about rats is their stomach that goes through peristalsis or moves faster the happier they are. So you can tell a really happy rat by how small the turds are and how close together they are. So they also leave a trail of little turds.
See.
Really, really, really.
Well, happy. Once again, the program, even as we close out the program, has gone to shit.
Okay, so
meanwhile, no, you're getting lots of advice, Sparky. I just got an email from James saying, Donnie the Rat, interrogate him first. Tracy would probably waterboard him.
Yes.
So everybody, yes, who everybody wants to vote for the lead pill, huh?
Yes. I got to vote for the lead pill, brother. You know I love you, man.
Well, we've got.
And I appreciate.
We got six. We got six people in the chat in the Horn Malloy Skype chat group. I'm gonna abstain. I'm gonna be like the president of the Senate. I will only break the tie.
I got to go with let him die. As Tom DeLuise said in History of the World, you know, let him die.
And I'm pretty sure Tracy's a kill him.
I'm sorry.
Rick's not available.
Dead.
Snork?
I'm against speciesism. I don't like to make anything suffer, so just make it quick if you have to kill him.
Hey, oh, yeah, quick. Yeah.
Well, I got a 1938 Winchester 22 rifle that I can just stick him through the cage, put it right to his head.
I'm not saying drench him with lighter fluid, catch him on fire, and watch him flop around. No, make it quick, man.
Yeah, less than about 0.35 seconds, and they won't feel anything.
I'll take that one more. That's the main thing, you know, torture. Take them out quick.
Right.
Okay.
Guillotine, split second, gone.
Or a brick from more than 45 feet.
Ah, physics. The physicist has been heard from. No, because we don't want Sparky falling off any ladders or having any misfires, because on the way out the door, I got this story. I'm not in favor of things involving firearms. I understand why you have one in a rural location. I really, really do. I mean, you never know when you're going to have to channel your inner Atticus Finch and take your glasses off and accidentally step on them on the ground and shoot the rabid dog at 150 paces. I get that. But news out of Northern Virginia, over around, not Arlington, Fairfax. I was about to say anthrax. So there's this person, there's this guy. He's 46 years old, and he works for the National Patriotic American Rifle Association. And he was in charge of your firearms training at your NRA headquarters. So yesterday afternoon, he was putting his Freedom Protector blue steel penis extension back in the holster when, and everybody knows what comes next, the gun just went off. The accidental shooting happened at the NRA's National Firearms Museum at 11250 Waples Mill Road in Fairfax. The employee suffered a minor wound to his lower body and was taken to a hospital for treatment. Officers worked with the Commonwealth Attorney's Office, and no charges are expected, according to police. News 4 has reached out to the NRA for comment, but has not received an immediate response. Sparky, I don't want you to be part of one of those "the gun just went off" moments. So, poison the little bastard, will you? That's just me. But anyway, it's time for us to get out of here. Thank you very kindly for a wonderful broadcast week. I really appreciate it. And I look forward to more on Monday, which we've covered, which is awesome. So thank you very, very much indeed. And thanks to our all-volunteer staff. Thank you to Sparky. Thank you to Utility chat room moderator Steve from Georgistan. Thank you to our news ninjas. Thank you, John Fox and Ben Birch. Thank you, White Rose Society. I'm in a hurry. Thank you to Ben Birch of WhiteRoseSociety.org. And thanks to the hardest working, bravest people I know, the men and women of Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And always, 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 Gina, it's all for you. Have a great weekend, everybody. Bye now.